Welcome to Radio Who, What, Why. I'm Jeff Sheckman. For the 14th time, we've recently marked the tragic events of 9/11. In so doing, we are also marking an event that set in motion a chain of events that has bequeathed us two wars, thousands of deaths, random terror attacks, fear, and ultimately confusion about how we got here and what's next. How did the cause of those attacks and even the failure to take action that could have prevented them lead us perhaps in the wrong national direction? All of that, and even the release of the 28 pages of the 9/11 report that we spoke with Senator Bob Graham about last week, raises the specter of what we still don't fully understand about what really transpired. And if we don't, how do we know that what we're doing today is the right thing to deal with terror and to prevent future attacks? My guest, Colleen Rowley, was a longtime FBI agent and division legal counsel. She blew the whistle on the FBI's failure to act on information provided by the Minneapolis field office that might have prevented the attacks. She ran for Congress in Minnesota, and she continues to write and blog about U.S. policy. It is my pleasure to welcome her here to the program. Colleen, thanks so much for joining us here on Radio Who, What, Why.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You know, in politics, and I guess in the corporate world as well, people like to say that the cover-up is often worse than the crime. In your view, talk a little bit about how the initial FBI cover-up played a role not in shaping the events of 9/11, not in allowing those events to happen, but in misdirecting us in terms of our response once it happened.
And it was not only, of course, the FBI. If you realize the Bush administration fought tooth and nail to have to stop or prevent any inquiry at all from the start. Dick Cheney made calls to Daschle so that they would not have a congressional inquiry. And basically, at least I know from the FBI, there was eventually when a Joint Intelligence Committee was started, there was a timeline made that omitted some crucial things, but actually then skewed the facts in one direction. And people have kind of forgotten about this. It's 15 years ago. But in those first few months after 9/11, Condi Rice had gone out and said no one would ever have expected a plane to fly into a building. And that really was the narrative. That was the prevailing narrative. Nobody spoke up and said, no, there had been, of course, even training exercises with that premise. There had been planning for international conferences that planned, you know, that took that into account. There had been a prior terrorist who had threatened to fly into CIA headquarters, et cetera. So all of the government aligned itself so as to put out a narrative that 9/11 was not there was no warnings about this, and that that there was nothing that could have been done. And at the same time, then they were with this prior agenda to launch war on Iraq, and of course in the meantime they had to launch war on Afghanistan. And very quickly, and what people didn't know is that they got the lawyers at the Office of Legal Counsel to begin writing memos that legalized, I put legalized in quotes, things like torture. And this wasn't a year later. This was really quickly. Within days, they were writing these memos. One memo within a couple of weeks of 9/11 said that there would no longer be freedom of speech, that the First Amendment would have to take a back seat now to the necessities of war. And, you know, that's a form almost of martial law. And that was all done secretly. And so the people didn't have any idea. And then again, the news was not able that quickly to get out the facts. And, you know, that's the sad story, is that we ended up doing all of these things, launching war in Iraq that had absolutely no connection to 9/11, beginning to torture, beginning the series of kidnappings and indefinite detentions and black sites. Even the massive spying was begun quite soon after 9/11. And none of this had any real relevancy to how the attacks had actually occurred, you know, the facts behind it, because there had been no inquiry or no investigation.
And that's really the question. In your experience, was there anybody in the FBI, in the intelligence community, in any level of government that you saw or that you touched that had any interest in looking beyond or going beyond the official narrative?
Well, the first people that seemed to have an interest were the Joint Intelligence Committee. That began in the early 2002, and that's where agencies were told that they should look up all the documents that gave any relevancy to terrorism. They were to provide all those documents, and they were to basically do, at least our FBI decided to do a timeline of facts. They're kind of our story and we're sticking to it. and so this began, I would say, February, March of 2002. That's when I was aware. I actually made calls because when the first drafts of these timeline came out in the FBI, I called up and I said, well, you know, there was the Mousavi case and we tried to brief headquarters about that. And so their excuse for not including some of this was, well, that was an oral briefing. That was a verbal briefing, and we're only going by written documentation. And yet the things that were in writing, some of the things that they included into the timeline, which was there was no probable cause for having acted on the Mousavi case, that actually was verbal. Those were verbal briefings too. But they included them when they wanted to, and they just did not include other things. So we objected, you know, early on. It wasn't just me, but nothing changed because they were in the power seat in Washington, D.C. So